Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today. Well, good morning, and I want to welcome all of our listeners to Women Leading the Way Radio, which is brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Michelle Berquist, your host. I love being the host, and I want to make sure that we give a big welcome to our leading lady today, which is my buddy and co-founder to Connected Women of Influence, Jamie Pittman, the president of Barron Center. Good morning, Jamie.
Good morning, Michelle. How are you?
I'm great. Well, I can't wait to talk about our subject this morning because, you know, so many people, at least with, you know, all the things that have happened in business are transitioning, you know, from starting a business or they are getting out of business and selling their business and going back to work for other people. And it's such a big topic of transitioning, you know, from working on your own to then obviously like in your situation, what a gold mine here for you to be able to sell your business, but then you're working in an organization. So I'd love for people to hear a little bit, I mean, what is Barron Center? Because, you know, there's a link on our radio show page, but what does Barron Center do, if you don't mind sharing a little bit?
I'd love to. Barron Center Incorporated, we also call ourselves BCI, is about, I guess, going on 18 years old now. It is a consulting, training, and coaching company. We have a really unusual niche in that market in that our founder wrote one of the first books that was ever published on the topic of workplace violence prevention. So we've been pioneers in the field of workplace violence prevention since the inception of the firm. Over the years, we've had the chance to expand our business approach, all with the focus to aligning behaviors in the workplace to the goals of the leaders of the organization. We do a lot of leadership development, as well as still intervening on a regular basis in the bad and dangerous behaviors that can happen in the workplace. I've got a great team of experts around me.
Well, and, you know, I love that your tagline is transforming lives, you know, really transforming organizations, right? It's like, you know, people are better, companies are better. I love that. I love that tagline. And, you know, out of full disclosure, it's like you and I know each other really well. But, you know, from that, knowing each other, I know you've been through quite the whirlwind in the last year and a half, 2 years here, because can you kind of share, you actually have a long history with Barron Center, not only working with them, but then having an opportunity where you bought the business and then sold the business. Can you kind of go through and share with people what that was like?
Yeah, you know, it's been a wonderful sort of a case study of the power of networking. I had known the founders of the company, Tony Barron and his wife Bobby, for many years. I left the state, and when I came back, I was just reconnecting with people, and they knew my previous work history and said, please come and do for us what you used to do when you were in the staffing world. So I joined them in March of 2000 as the business development person, and they'd never had anyone in quite that position quite so formally. And I had the chance to really build relationships and expand the visibility of the organization and work with this amazing team of professionals. Was with the firm, and Tony Barron was actually segueing out into a new career path, and he and Bobby approached me and my husband about buying the firm from them. So in November of 2000, I'd been there a little over 5 years, I had the honor of purchasing the company from its founder, and was also fortunate that the entire team stayed with me. We had some double-digit growth years, which were absolutely amazing and just so much fun. And then as the economy turned, you know, we had a couple of years that were pretty stagnant and a little bit more challenging as a small business owner. And then in January of last year, so January of 2012, I had the chance to sell the business and stay on as its president, which has just been such a compliment and such a wonderful outcome for me.
Well, and there's a couple of things I want to kind of go into in a little more detail, because I think, you know, so many people that start a business, you know, they start and they're, I will say even me, starting a business, and I've been a long-term entrepreneur and small business owner. It's like I can't imagine myself not being in business for myself. But, you know, for you, when you bought the business, I mean, did you think you were going to be long-term as the owner, or did you buy the business with the intention to think, gosh, you know, I'm going to sell this in a couple of years? I'm kind of curious, what was your mindset when you bought it? To retire with it, or?
Well, I think I always figured I would retire with it and it would stay in the family. You know, you know my son, and over the years we would joke about, you know, him becoming the heir apparent and trying to guide my decisions so that he'd have a place to land. And actually he has ended up being really devoted to the training world, which is a terrific outcome. I didn't know what I didn't know when I bought the business, and even with you in my corner and someone I've always respected for your knowledge being a small business and an entrepreneur, I didn't know what I didn't know. And so we went into it loving the team, loving the work that we do, loving the impact and effect of our successful engagements, and really thinking that we would be there forever. I think that had the economy not turned, we probably wouldn't have. Soured on it is not the right way to put it, but the challenges became so difficult for us. And I don't think that we ever thought that we would be able to sell it. And so it was just the way I think the universe was in control when we were approached by one of our longtime clients about the possibility of partnering or perhaps investing in the company. And then that led to an outright, you know, inquiry about buying the firm.
And, you know, that leads to a question, Jamie, because it's like, you know, do you feel there was anything, you know, at that point of when you were approached, right, by a very, you know, big client of yours that said, hey, you know, let's do this, or I'm interested in you. Do you feel there was anything that you and Barron Center did to kind of put yourself out there to say we're kind of for sale, but not, you know, too much? I mean, or was it just, oh, my gosh, mm-hmm. this, you know, karma up there, the world's collided. I'm kind of curious, do you feel there were any strategies that you did to kind of put yourself out that you were available or not?
Well, you know, that's interesting, because I don't think that we had a very strategic plan in place about selling the organization. In fact, so this may not be much use or much guidance for your listeners, but in our case, the business leader that had been our client, I had actually turned to him when the economy was tough as sort of a coach or a mentor about some decisions. And so the approach that way was more of me meeting someone to sort of bounce ideas off of and be a guide, because he had been our client for so long and we had serviced his, he's got several business units, but we had serviced one of the primary business units for years and in the full range of our services. So he certainly knew my team and its capabilities quite well. And we discovered that there was a real alignment as we got to know each other in our values and in our goals for the organization. So it was more of me approaching him as our professional relationship grew and asking for some guidance or coaching along the way that led to an inquiry on his end about maybe investing or financing some of the planned growth and expansion I was never quite able to achieve on my own. And rather than me setting out to position ourselves or getting it out in the marketplace that we were available for a sale.
And, you know, I guess also, you know, they always talk about, you know, so I'm intently listening to what you're saying and I'm going, you know, after you got approached and then you started having the conversation, right? So do you feel, I'm kind of curious to know about this, you know, the negotiation part, because, you know, everybody talks about their advisors to business owners that, okay, you got to be prepared for the negotiation. You got to know what you want. You got to know what you're willing to walk away from. So I'm kind of curious, how strategic was that? How nervous were you in those conversations? And do you feel you were adequate? Do you feel you were a master of conversing, or did it just happen naturally? I mean, I'm like, you know, because everybody says, oh, you got to be prepared to go to battle. Was it like that, or was it very amicable and easy? I know because you've shared that with me, but what was it like to kind of go through the negotiation process, or was there any?
Well, the funny thing was that the day that the conversation shifted from some sort of an investment and partnership to his saying, you know, I think I really want to buy the whole deal, and my reaction to that question, rather than the shock that I would have anticipated, or had it been a year earlier, I might have actually been defensive about protecting my baby. You know, I at that point assumed I'd retire and it would always be in the family. The day that he said that to me about, you know, I want to buy the whole deal, my response was, what would that look like? And when I left the office, I realized right away that I was ready for that conversation. Even though I hadn't expected it, I realized that I was ready, you know, and the fact that I'd asked that question. And when I got back to my car after the conversation and kind of laying out some game plan, you know, steps about, yeah, I'm going to need this, that, and the other, my first phone call wasn't to my husband. It was to a CWI member who became a networking buddy who is in the business of selling and buying businesses. Mm-hmm. So in my car, my first phone call was to Tina Marino of the Hein Group. And Tina was able to help and coach and advise and do all the steps that were necessary to prep the accounting process, you know, for the business. I had some things to take care of in terms of my corporate governance. You know, my books were relatively clean, but this was such new territory for me. And when I bought the company, after buying it, as I said earlier, I realized I didn't know what I didn't know. And I was really determined not to be in the same position as we were selling the company. So Tina's advice and guidance and handholding on occasion was so important and so critical for me, and made the process a little less scary. Was it a negotiation? Maybe not as much as I would have liked to have seen. I think that the client that was buying us realized that he was sort of in the driver's seat, you know, because I was ready and willing to go. But I also had such high trust in him that there was no doubt along the way that I was going to be treated fairly. So although there was some give and take on some of the details, there were other things about which, you know, it was really apparent and clear it was just the way he did business. And my choice was either be okay with the way that he did business or walk away. You know, there were some things that are just really part and parcel of the way that he's acquired the business units he has that I needed to make decisions about. You know, will I be okay with this? How important is that going forward? And my husband and I spent a lot of time getting advice from Tina and then discussing on those few issues, you know, are we okay with this? You know, is it a gamble? Is it not a gamble because of trust? And I know in the world, no matter how much you trust people, things do go awry. And attorneys, of course, and Tina too, you know, I know you trust him, but there was always the concern or caution to protect us. But it was okay. You know, Dwayne and I made choices about moving the deal forward that we're very comfortable with. And I think it turned out well.
Well, and, you know, for the listeners, because we have listeners listening in all over the U.S., it's like I'm kind of curious, you know, for our small business owners that are listening, you know, what advice would you give them as to, okay, you know, in some cases, business owners know they want to sell it. They want to sell their business. I mean, would you recommend that somebody go out and find advisors? It's like, you know, some are really expensive, some are reasonable, but what would be your advice to someone who's looking to test the waters and see if they can sell their business or if they're looking to sell their business?
Well, the one thing that I will say for sure is when I bought the business, I thought I was well represented because I had been referred to a CPA and I had an attorney. After going through the process of buying the business, I realized that neither of those people, although they were licensed professionals, neither were really adept, skilled, or experienced at representing during that process. So there were surprises that came out after I bought the business that I felt wouldn't have happened had I been represented by someone or multiple someones who had done that as part of their normal practice. So I really feel that that was a mistake on my part. And again, you know, not knowing, I didn't know what I didn't know. So going forward with the sale of the business, I was really determined not to make those same kinds of mistakes. So I worked with a really seasoned transactional attorney. Oh, by the way, another CWI contact, someone that I met through CWI. All of my professional relationships, in fact, have come out of CWI, just as an aside. But so I had a great attorney representing me, and she did the interaction with my client's attorney. So I was able to sort of step back out of that fray, which was really important for me. And I felt that she was really fighting to protect me and our interests and our rights, and that was critical. So yes, it was an expense, but it was really well worth it. And same thing with Tina, with the Hine Group. You know, she was able to negotiate things for me that I probably wouldn't have thought of asking about, because I don't know what I don't know. And I was dealing with a very well-established international enterprise that certainly did know what they were doing. And so had I tried to approach that on my own, I don't think it would have turned out as positively as it did. I'm sure it's a different decision if you're a small business owner selling to a small business owner or a small, you know, individual. But I think in all cases, you know, unless you've got the background and the education and the credentials to represent yourself that way, it's worth the expense to get professional help on your side.
And I think that's wise advice, just because, again, I mean, I know you've shared with me, it's like how critical the conversations and the kind of advice that Tina gave you and Jennifer, you know, of things that you weren't thinking of. You know, I mean, you were thinking about, you know, a set of things that were issues that you wanted to discuss and things that were important to you. And I know you very, very verbally shared with me how much the conversation was valuable to you of what Tina and Jennifer recommended. Hey, have you thought about, have you thought about, don't forget. And I think it's just like going to a doctor, right? You know, you're worried about your health, but you have somebody else in there with you. But the doctor, it's like they're seeing things that you just aren't. And I think that's really good advice to tell people. So super. Good. Go Tina, go Jennifer. We'll give a little shout out
there. Yeah, I have one other thought about that as well. In aligning with those two women as my support system during that process, their skill sets and their styles are significantly different from my own. And that was really good because, you know, my style, I can be assertive, but I'm definitely not aggressive. Well, you know that about me. My style is not good with, you know, what could appear to be a confrontational conversation. So for me to try to represent myself against someone else's attorney, I would have had ulcers by the end of it. So I think I was wise in that I aligned with people that I knew would support and augment my natural talents and abilities and could represent me in ways that I wouldn't be able to represent myself. So I think about that as well. You don't need to have your twin representing you. You know, you need someone who's going to have bring a different set of skills to the table when you're going through that negotiation.
No, good point, good point. Well, I want to shift gears a little bit because I know the kind of whole focus was, you know, we're setting it up, but, you know, again, the kind of word on the street, if I can use that phrase, is how difficult it is to transition from owning a business to then working for someone else. And in your case, I mean, you sold the business and now, you know, can you kind of talk about what has been the transition like from, you know, being sold, right, then acclimating yourself into a larger organization and company culture, knowing you still are running the thing, but, I mean, your business was kind of like, you know, fit into this this big box. What's that been like, and what's it like to go from you making the decisions? And I know there were lots of other benefits that came along with the package of a larger company that, you know, can support you. But how difficult or how easy has it been to transition from being the big dog to being an executive at a larger company? What's that been like?
Well, early on, one of the things that could have even further complicated the transition was that I lost the lease of the office space where my office had been for many years. And we were close to sealing the deal. I was now out of office space, and the decision was, gosh, do we move home for a while? You know, we don't go get another space. What do we do? So I turned to the client who was buying us and said, you know, here's my dilemma. Here are the plans that I have. Just wanted to share with you and see what your thoughts were. And he made space for me in their corporate staff area. So I moved from my office into a corporate staff position in his headquarters company before the deal was sealed. So there was a little bit of awkwardness around that because there I was on premises but not officially part of the family yet. So that was a little awkward, but it gave me a chance to really settle in and see things before the transition. During that period, though, instruction I kept getting when I, you know, when we'd come across a problem, and I would think to myself, you know, I don't know how this new owner is going to handle those decisions. Very early on, I was told, do what you do. you know, do what you do to run your business. So early on, I made the decision that I still had to run the business. So even though they didn't know me and things might have been moving slowly with their getting to know me, I still had to run the business. You know, we still had goals. I still had a team that I needed to support and that was looking to me for direction. So I functioned, continued to function as the president during the transition. But every so often I would think that something was relevant or germane to share, and I would, you know, reach out or say, here's an issue and here's what my decision is going to be. So that was during the initial few months of transition. It's now been a year and a few months, and I have to say that I'm getting the support that I would have wanted to get from a larger entity in terms of, you know, strategic planning, infrastructure support as we're trying to grow. And, you know, right now our website is still an embarrassment, but we're working on it. You know, all those things that a small business owner might not find the cash flow to do, I'm getting that support from this right. company, which is great because it's allowing us to grow. The mantra has continued to be, do what you do. And I, from my own gut, know when it's appropriate to update. We do have regular meetings. I'm sharing what's going on. But I continue to function as though it is my decision. And because this is a high-trust relationship, and because our values were aligned before we moved, you know, before I moved in with them, so to speak, it's been a pretty easy transition. There's not a lot of discordance in the way that we get along because we knew going in that our values were aligned and it was a high trust relationship. So I think that it would be a different question if you were selling the business and walking away than it is if you're selling the business and staying in. So to stay on as president, it was critically important that we knew that our values were aligned, that it was a high trust relationship. And this is a shout out from anyone who's looking at relationships. The book, The Speed of Trust by Stephen M. R. Covey, that's Stephen Covey's son. So it's kind of a junior Stephen M. R. Covey. Fabulous book that really quantifies the importance of trust in a relationship. It says, makes the case that if trust is high, decisions happen quickly, which means speed goes up and costs go down. So if we look at the relationship I have here now, we trust each other. My decisions aren't second guessed. I'm respectful in the way that I deliver information. And I am more analytical now because my boss is a numbers guy than I ever have been before. But there's a lot of trust there. And so things happen just as quickly because I'm not being second guessed or challenged and I haven't disappointed in the way that I make decisions and run things. So I think that the critical thing is that high trust relationship, and it's really important if you're going to stay on to know before you make the decision to stay on that that is there and that you can function under those, under that new arrangement.
Well, and I think, I mean, I got to say, from the people I've known that have sold businesses and they're still involved, including, you know, my experience, which was more of a, you know, a situation where it was in a distress situation when I sold my business quite a few years ago, you know, most people will tell me, and this is pretty much, you're among the you're not normal, Jamie. Let me put this way, and it'll be a compliment, is that most people, when they sell their business and they're still on, it's like they're so frustrated because, you know, they've been making the decisions. And it's like, I mean, I know an example right now of a colleague of mine. They've sold their business. I mean, they family-run business. They've built it up. They've sold it to a national organization. And it's just sheer frustration. So, you know, it sounds like you've had a lovely experience. It's like, but, you know, it's kind of getting to something that I think is a nerve and a chord that's very specific. What has been the hardest transition for you going from owning the business into, you know, the executive role that you're playing now with your company now, you know, being run or owned by somebody else? I'm kind of curious. What's been the hardest transition for you?
I think there are probably a couple of things that have been tough. And one is that after being with the firm for, you know, at this point, 13 years, having owned it for a while, I sort of do feel as though it's not my baby to the same degree anymore. And that's difficult sometimes, you know, although I'm still so proud of the team and we're getting new opportunities and I'm still so proud of that. But that's been a little emotional for me at times. Also, as I mentioned, my boss is a numbers guy. I'm not. We do have other stylistic differences, you know, in just in our communication styles and whatever. So I guess I'm grateful that I'm in the industry that I am in, you know, where I'm aware and can recognize and accept differences and try to deal with them. If I didn't have that awareness, if I wasn't around a team of people who talk about communication and style, I would probably be having a difficult time with that because we are very different people, but I know that our values are aligned. I know that there's trust there. I know that, you know, his ethics and intent are good. So I'm able to handle those stylistic differences. Both of us, I think, do with some grace because we're both, you know, enlightened in that regard and recognize that those things happen. The other thing is a really much more practical difference that was more in my head than it was a reality. And that was moving into the corporate staff area, especially I suddenly thought, oh no, they're going to expect to see me here from 8 to 5 every day. And that wasn't my model. You know, I'm still doing business development. I'm still servicing clients. I'm on the road. If there's a Starbucks nearby, that becomes a satellite office for a time frame, you know. And so I wasn't used to knowing or thinking that people were going to be seeing my face, that they were going to be judging my visibility and all of that. So during the negotiation process, that actually is something that Tina Marino brought up in one of the conversations was, you know, what were the expectations be in that regard? And it was something I never would have thought to ask probably or would have been comfortable asking, but Tina had hit it head on. And right. It was very clear, just do your job, do what you need to do, be where you need to be, when you need to be there, and that's it. So I have changed a little bit in that I do spend more time in the office now, especially I have team around me, so it's important that I be here. But it's a judgment I have made based on the situation and not based on an expectation that you will be at your desk from 8 to 5. You know, that's not the case. But the potential for that could have been a huge rub for someone who was used to doing her own thing, whether it was sitting in a Starbucks or, you know, at home with my feet up and my laptop on my lap. I did what needed to be done 7 days a week. And I think, fortunate that I knew coming in what the expectation was. And again, that the expectation was a realistic one. They know I sell. They know I service clients. I can't possibly be at my desk as often as some of the other executives are who may be human resources or finance specific, you know, and therefore are functioning in the office. So I think I dodged a bullet there potentially, but mm-hmm. yeah, that was the potential for huge issues.
No, and I think that's really, that, again, just for Tina's advice to you on that, who'd be thinking that? And I know that was of concern, and wow, what a gift on your part to have somebody that just was that flexible to say, look, you know, it's not about micromanaging and watching your time here. As yeah. I know other companies, yeah. It is absolutely about face time and how long you're there and if you're there early or late, which is, you know, tough for entrepreneurs because some entrepreneurs I know, it's like they work, or like I do, 3 to 6 a.m. in the morning. That's when you get the most mm-hmm. done. But who would mm-hmm. be visible to yep. see that kind of work, right?
Yeah,
so I
yeah,
love
exactly.
that.
Yeah, I think the big lesson really is if you're going to sell, be represented, and if you're going to sell and stay on, the way to avoid a lot of that conflict is to get it all out in front. And then the decision becomes, oh boy, you know, these folks are way different than I'm used to. I want to stay on. Perhaps you need to stay on, but don't find yourself being surprised by the way that they do business because you didn't ask, didn't spend time with them ahead of time.
Gosh. Good advice on that front. This was great. I mean, this is what I think, you know, seems to be kind of like focus of what it's like to sell a business. I think so many people don't realize, just like when they start a business or buy one, but on the back end of selling a business and when now you're part of the company that either keeps you on because you sold it and now you're, mm-hmm. you know, making that transition, or in your case, being an executive in a bigger pond, so to speak, in selling your business, I think it's a tough transition. But how you acclimate, and you are the master of kind of like, you know, observing the culture and seeing what that's like. So any final thoughts that you want to share with our listeners before we wrap up? Because believe it or not, our time's almost out. scary, right?
Wow. I can't believe it went that fast. I was afraid we'd run out of things to talk about. You know, I have to say that I've been really fortunate and very much blessed in this whole process because I love what my team does. I'm proud of the impact and the influence that they have in especially problematic situations or poor performance. I just am so proud of that. And to be able to stay on with an organization that's investing in our success has just been such a gift for me. So, you know, maybe our transition is not the norm because it's turned out to be so positive, but I think a lot of that has been through the due diligence that was done, the relationship that we had, and that, you know, I was given an opportunity to stay on with people that I knew well, and mm-hmm. I don't know how often that happens, you know?
I think it's just, seriously, it's like to see what you've gone through, and again, like I said, this has been an evolution where, you know, how amazing to have somebody bring up that they're interested in your business because, you know, again, it's not like you put up a for sale sign and say, I'm ready to sell my business. I mean, it's a different ballgame today. There's just, you know, a more kind of elusive element, and that's, you know, what I wanted you to share.
Especially
so with that said, go ahead.
Service industry, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, because it's not a brick-and-mortar facility that's like, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Joe's Chop Shop that you can, you know, sell
yep.
a brick-and-mortar.
We have
so.
No widgets. Yep, no widgets.
Well, I just want to say thank you for your time. So we're going to wrap
Michelle.
Up here, but if
thank
people
you.
Do want to contact you, I've got a link to the Barron Center site, but do you want to share a number for people to contact you if they have questions or if they're interested?
Sure.
In
and I'm not sure that the website is updated with our extensions, but 760-476-9110, and I'm at extension 704.
Awesome. Janie, thank you, and thanks to all of our listeners
Michelle.
For listening in. We will be back again. We're going back to our regular Monday morning Women Leading the Way radio show. So I hope all of you have a great week, and thanks for listening in, and we'll look forward to hearing you next week as we talk to our leading ladies about how they're leading the way in business today. Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.